Well, in the earlier part of our service, we sang Dare to be a Daniel. And over the weeks, you sang it and sang it and sang it. But we often say, don't we, young people, be a Daniel for Jesus. Have courage, make a stand. And when we looked at chapter 1 a number of weeks ago, Daniel was aged 15, 16, 17 when he was captured in his own country and taken as a slave to Babylon. And we noted that key verse, chapter 1, verse 8, Daniel resolved in his heart not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. He purposed, he resolved, he was determined, he made up his mind. He would stand for the things of God as a 15, 16, 17-year-old lad. And what an encouragement and an example he's been to young people. But actually, he should be an example to elderly people too. Because here in chapter 6, Daniel is in his golden years. Commentators tell us he maybe was about 80 years old when chapter 6 took part. And so, dare to be a Daniel in your older years as well. Show the same courage, the same commitment that Daniel demonstrated for us. So we often tell it as a kid's story, and that's good and fine, but it's an older person's story as well. And we should invite all the octogenarians to make a stand as well. There's a para-church movement called Youth for Christ, where they encourage young people to serve Jesus. And it's a cracking organisation. Perhaps we should start one, Geriatrics for Jesus. Because you guys still have got plenty of time and plenty of talent, and I think energy, to do a work for Jesus. Of course, you realise that as you get old, age has many benefits. Someone listed some, and here's a few I'll share with you. Age has got the benefit. For example, if you're ever held hostage, you're likely to be the first released. So take that home as a word of comfort. No one ever expects you to run into a burning building, okay? People no longer view you as a hypochondriac when you're elderly. There's nothing left to learn the hard way as the years advance. Here's a good one. Things you buy now will not wear out. Another one, another sign of getting older, another benefit. You enjoy hearing about other people's operations. You can party and your neighbours don't even realise it. And this is my favourite. Your secrets are safe with your friends because they can't remember them either. So getting old has a number of advantages. I got my comeuppance on camp just over a week ago. Mark and Sarah Donaghy were there with baby Emily, and I was holding baby Emily, and I walked from table to table to talk to the campers. And of course, if you've got a baby, you've got a natural opening for a conversation. You don't have to force the conversation. So I just stood at the table, and they would start talking about the baby, and I would hold the baby and chat to the campers. And there was two girls who didn't know I could hear, but one girl turned to a friend and said, I think it's the baby's granddad. So I'm for Geriatrics for Jesus as well now. I'm on your side. So Daniel is a great example, hey, to all of us, to have courage, to show commitment, to be men and women for God, whatever our age, young, middle-aged or old. And I want to put this under three main headings, chapter 6. First of all, the trap is set. That's verses 1 to 9. The trap is set. At the start of the chapter, again, we see the success of Daniel. Verses 1 to 3. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them, so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. So chapter 6 starts off by informing us Daniel was a success. We could say he's been a success all of his life. He has stood the test of time. He's still viewed as one of the top heads of state in the nation. Reader's Digest describes success this way. A successful man is one who can make more money than his wife can spend. And it goes on to say, a successful woman is one who can find this man. Well, we pick up the story in Daniel chapter 6. Verse 2 tells us he's made or given a key political appointment. One of three governors, three prime ministers ruling over the land. And as we enjoy chapter 6, please note there is a new monarch on the throne. A change of dynasty. Nebuchadnezzar is no more. The Babylonian Empire, which was so great and looked like it would last forever, has gone. Conquered by the power, the might of the Medes and the Persians. And now King Darius is on the throne. Taking over and running an empire must be an incredible task. How do you do it? Well, this verse tells us how the new regime kicked off. He divided the country or the empire, the region, into 120 areas. Over each area, one man was responsible to organise that particular area, and they were answerable to the three prime ministers, the three heads of state, who themselves were answerable to the king. That's how you ran an empire in those days when you took it over. And verse 3 says, Daniel so distinguished himself that they were going to make him number one in the land. He had exceptional qualities. It doesn't say by his political manoeuvring. He put a backhander here. He did a dodgy deal there. He pulled the string. He compromised here and there. And he rose to success. It doesn't say that. By his exceptional qualities. Hard work. Honesty. Wisdom. It was noted by other people. And you and I, if we are hard workers, if we are honest, it will be noted by other people. Daniel is an example of proving you can be successful in business and politics without compromising your character. Someone has said this, be genuine and sincere. Remember the little rhyme. Don't be veneer stuck on with glue. Be solid mahogany all the way through. Got that? Be people of character. Don't be veneer stuck on with glue. It looks good on the surface, but when you peel the top layer off, it's just chipboard underneath. Be solid mahogany all the way through. May we, like Daniel, be men and women of character, known for our hard work, known for our honesty, known for our trustworthiness, known for people of character. I wonder if I was to ask your work colleagues, you were to ask my neighbour, what's he like? What are they like? I wonder what they'd say. God looks for people who are hard workers and trustworthy. And have you noticed that in the Bible, the people God calls to do great things are all busy people? None of them are sitting on the sides with their feet up. For example, Moses was busy with the flocks at Horeb. Gideon was busy threshing wine in the wine press. Saul was busy searching for his father's lost animals. Elisha was busy ploughing with a yoke of oxen. David was busy caring for the sheep. Nehemiah was busy as a butler taking the wine cup into the presence of the king. Amos was busy following the flock. Peter and Andrew were busy casting their nets into the sea. James and John were busy mending their nets. Matthew was busy collecting taxes. Wherever you look, it's busy, busy people that God calls into his service. He doesn't work with the lazy or the idle. He looks for those already doing stuff and calls them into his service. Someone has said it's a bit like a car. If you've got a car that's stationary and you try and push it, it's hard work. But if it's already moving and you join the queue, it's so much easier. And God looks to guide people who are already active in his work. Daniel was. For 80 years, he had stood the test of time. Whatever the monarch, he just got on with working hard, doing his job. And God honoured him and prospered him and promoted him. Not only that, because of that, he is envied and targeted. Verses 4 to 9. Successful 1 to 3. Targeted and envied. Verses 4 to 9. And we're told in verse 4, halfway through, they could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent.
Success, of course, often breeds
resentment, doesn't it?
And Daniel soon experienced envy from other political leaders. Now, there's a difference between jealousy and envy. Jealousy is when you think you're going to lose something. Envy is when you want something other people have. And envy is always, always a negative trait in people. There's a Greek proverb that says, as rust corrupts iron, so envy corrupts a man. As rust corrupts iron, so envy corrupts a man. And it was the writer Joseph Epstein who put it this way. Of all the seven deadly sins, the only one that has no fun at all is envy. Envy. Of course, that great philosopher, Yoda from Star Wars, put it this way. Envy leads to jealousy. Jealousy leads to hate. Hate leads to anger. Anger leads to the dark side. Well, success always breeds those who become jealous or envious of a particular person. Daniel experienced that. They wanted to get rid of him, but they did not have... He was a Hebrew. He was a foreigner. He wasn't one of us, born into this country. He'd come over here and taken our jobs. Let's get rid of him. But they couldn't find a flaw in his character. The more they looked, the more you had to admire. And so failing to find a flaw in his character, they could find one with his faith. He prayed 3 times a day to the God of heaven. One of my lasting memories when we went to Israel in June was just how people prayed openly, unashamedly, all over Jerusalem. You'd sit in a cafe and there's a woman next to you on the next table, book open, praying and saying her prayers as if she was in the middle of the synagogue. You walk down the street and I remember a man jumping over a fence and getting out his prayer mat and saying his prayers. When we went to Jericho, I went to a shop and there was a window there and I couldn't see her now. I said, hello? And this little head popped up. He said, I'm just praying. I said, oh, sorry. He said, no problem. Someone else will come. And he just carried on as if it was the most natural thing in the world. And one of the things that impressed on me was, why do I get so embarrassed about praying? It's easy in church, but if I'm in a restaurant, you know, it's so hard to give thanks publicly. So hard, I find, to say to someone who's not part of the church, let me pray for you. Or to go through the same route. It's great when you can go away on your own. It's easy, but so hard to keep up our standards. Daniel prayed 3 times a day. And that's where they got him. That's where they got him. And these evil enemies knew how to trap him. They would simply go to the king and puff up his ego. You've got a brand new empire. How are you going to unite it? You've got people we've captured from different nations. Different backgrounds, different political outlooks. Different likes and dislikes. How can we, I know how we can unite them all on one project. We can focus them. We can turn them from Babylonians into good Persians overnight. Let's just pass a law that no one prays to any other god except for you. And then they can go back to their strange gods if they still want to. And the king has his ego puffed up. Pray to me. Admire me. And it will unite the nation. And so the trap is set. Second part is verses 10 to 17. 10 to 17. Men who trap animals in Africa for conservation purposes, and in olden days they used to catch them for their skins and to kill them, said one of the hardest creatures to get was the ring-tailed monkey. The ring-tailed monkey. They would try and they would try, but no matter how the hunters tried, they couldn't catch this creature. They got them another way. They simply paid for them off the locals. The natives could trap them and they would buy them with money. And the natives didn't find it hard at all to catch the ring-tailed monkey. They had a little plan. And they would simply get a coconut, they would cut it in half, and they would drill a hole in one half. Inside they would put a melon, or half of a melon, and then they would put the coconut sides back together and seal it up and hang it. And ring-tailed monkeys cannot resist melon, especially the seeds. And they would put their hand through the hole, grab a scoop of melon, but then of course they couldn't get their hand out because it was bigger than when it went in. It went in flat, but now it was holding melon. It was a ball, not flat. And they couldn't get, and no matter how hard they tried, they wouldn't let go of the melon to set themselves free. They literally trapped themselves. And so the locals simply came along and captured them, attached, complete with melon and coconut. These men had local knowledge. They knew how to get Daniel, butter up the king, and get him when it came to religion. Daniel is watched, verses 9 to 11. A decree had been published. He went home to his upstairs. He opened the window towards Jerusalem. 3 days he got down on his knees and he prayed. This was common practice amongst Jews. We read about it in Psalms and elsewhere. If you look towards Jerusalem, morning, afternoon and evening, you would pray. It was a good habit to have. Most of us tend to see habits in a negative way. But good habits stick just as bad habits stick. Someone put it this way. Habit is a cable. We weave a thread of it each day. And at last, we cannot break it. Remember on camp years ago, I used to get a kid out the front and sit him on a chair. I'd say, put your hands together like that, as if he was praying. And I'd get a piece of wool and I'd just wrap it round and say, now break it. And they'd say, easy. And they'd pull their hands apart and it would snap. And you say, okay, let's try again. And then you'd weave it round 2 or 3 times. Now break it, easy. And then you do it 10 times or 12 times or 15 times. Now, and of course, they couldn't. They could break it at 1 strand or at 5 strands, but you can't break it at 10 or 15. They were trapped. And habits are like that, bad habits. They trap us, don't they? Prevent us progressing in our Christian walk, our Christian faith. But actually, good habits stick as well. In a positive way. They help shape us. 3 times Daniel prayed. He knew the importance of devotion, so what we would call it, a quiet time. Time in God's presence. Do you know what? There was a pastor who shocked his congregation. He stood up, he said, this morning's service is how to steal, how to drink, and how to lie. Are you listening? Get your notepads out. Let's go for it. And he went on to say this. If you don't set aside a marked time and a place to have a quiet time, you ain't going to do it, folks. So each day you need to steal some time out of a busy day. You need to drink from the scriptures. It's clear and refreshing message. And each day you need to lie on your bed and meditate and let it sink in. So my sermon today, steal, drink and lie. The importance of a quiet time. Daniel knew the importance. And out of this whole chapter, for me, this is the key bit. Because for Daniel, the victory wasn't won in the den of lions, it was won in his bedroom. That's where he determined to carry on his regular practices. Just like for me, for Jesus, the victory was won in the Garden of Gethsemane. The cross followed, and that was hard and that was tough, but the decision to go was won in the garden, and the cross was what followed. For Daniel, the victory was won in the bedroom and the lion's den. And all that just followed. He's arrested and found guilty. Verses 12 to 17. Oh, an innocent man arrested simply for praying, yeah. Someone asked C.S. Lewis, why do the righteous suffer? He replied, why not? They're the only ones who can take it. And someone else put it in a poem. God have not promised skies ever blue, flower-strewn pathways always for you. God have not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. But he hath promised strength from above, unfailing sympathy, undying love. Daniel, an innocent man, arrested and tried simply for honouring his God. And then the third and the final bit of the story. The trap is spoiled. Verses 18 to 28. The trap is spoiled. Verses 18 to 20, we've got Daniel and the king. What a contrast between the two. Daniel, marked by prayer. The king, marked by worry. Did you notice in verses 18 to 20? He couldn't eat. He couldn't sleep. He didn't want his entertainers or his concubines. His conscience was playing him up, and he chewed over the events of his actions all night long. We're not told, but I think Daniel had a good meal. And I like to think Daniel slept and had a good night's sleep. What made the difference? Daniel was a man of faith. And prayer is an acknowledgement of faith. Worry is always a denial of faith. Prayer is putting my hand into the hand of God. It's saying, God, come and get involved in my situation. It's bringing God into the equation. Worry is taking my hand away from God and saying, I can handle it on my own. Prayer leads us through the door of faith into the presence of God. Worry leads us through the door of anxiety into darkness and loneliness, discouragement. If prayer rules your life, victory results. If worry dictates, then defeat is the result. What a contrast between the two. And I love it when Daniel is pulled out of the pit, his reply, verse 18 to 23. Daniel answered. Again, it's a turning point in the chapter, isn't it? If Daniel hadn't answered, the chapter ends in defeat. But those two words, Daniel answered, speak of the victory God brings to his people. And three things happen in these final few verses. Verses 19 to 23, the Lord is exalted. Daniel makes sure God gets the glory. He's done that, of course, all through his life. When you read those chapters again and again, Daniel always says, I can't, but God can. I can't, but God can. The great composer, Johann Sebastian Bach, on all his compositions, has two little letters at the top. JJ. JJ. It stands for Jesus Juva. Jesus, help me. And at the end of his compositions, Bach has the letters SDG. Soli Dei Gratiae. Which means, to God alone be praise. God, you help me. When he finished his composition, he said, you get the glory. You could write those words over Daniel, couldn't you? Lord, you help. And at the end, it's all of God. You get the glory. So the Lord is exalted. Verse 24, the traitors are judged. They get the punishment designed for Daniel. Sir Robert Watson, Watt. What a great name. Sir Robert Watson Watt invented the radar speed gun. You know that gun we all love to see at the side of the road? He invented the radar. One occasion, he was caught himself in the radar trap. And shortly after that irony, he wrote this poem. Pity Sir Paul Robert Watson Watt, strange target of the radar plot. And this with others I could mention, a victim of his own invention. Well, at least he could laugh about it. Those who tried to destroy Daniel were themselves destroyed, victims of their own invention. And lastly, thirdly, God's servant prospered. Verse 28. Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Darius's reign was quite short. We're not told when or how. And Cyrus the Great came onto the throne. And Daniel prospered. I wonder what that means. Did he prosper financially? As a politician, a top one in the land, he would have been loaded anyway. Where could he go in his position, apart from being king? He was made number one in the land. How did he prosper? We're not told, but maybe. He saw Cyrus pass the law that allowed his own people to go back to their homeland. Because Cyrus allowed the people to go from Babylon back to Jerusalem. Well, Daniel has a message for all God's people today. We're being attacked by an enemy. We live in a hostile world. We're suffering if we stand up for righteousness. We may well experience the fiery furnace or the den full of lions. But whatever our circumstances, like Daniel, let's be men and women of courage who carry on our good habits, who live out daily our faith, whatever our situation. Let's pray.